When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
If I am more empathetic towards MS-13 gang members from El Salvador than I am to American vets, that's suicidal empathy. If I argue that all immigrants, irrespective of which culture they come from, are equally likely to assimilate into the host society, that's suicidal empathy. If I think it's not really nice to punish felons who've already been arrested 137 times, that's suicidal empathy. Many of our failings in our domestic and foreign policies are due to this misfiring of empathy.
Hello, I'm Fraser Myers, Deputy Editor of Spikes. I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined by Gad Saad. Gad, you're an evolutionary psychologist, professor of marketing, and author of The Parasitic Mind. I wanted to start off by asking you about your childhood. You have a really interesting childhood. You grew up Jewish in Lebanon, and some of the changes that's happening there, the tumult, the civil war, sheds light on our current moment, I think.
Indeed. So I was part of the last remaining group of Jews in Lebanon in the mid-70s. Most of my extended family had already left because maybe they read the writing on the wall better than my parents did. Mm. Or maybe my parents read the writing on the wall but refused to, chose to ignore it. And so in 1975, the civil war began. It was a brutally nasty civil war where former neighbors became, arch enemies. And so we were there the first year of the war, saw things that no human being should see or experience. And luckily, we were able to escape into Montreal. My parents returned to Lebanon after we had emigrated to Canada. And on one of their return trips to Lebanon, they were kidnapped by Fatah. So many of the things that we see today with the kidnapping of hostages and so on are things that I lived very deeply in my childhood.
And when you were younger, you were in a class, and one of the boys said that he wanted to be a Jew killer when he grew up.
Right. So I can mention a few stories there because I in the Parasitic Mind, I'm trying to demonstrate that, Jew hatred is not something that just sort of arose after the Civil War. It was something that even in, quote, progressive, tolerant Lebanon, Beirut is the Paris of the Middle East. Tolerance in the Middle East has a very different connotation than tolerance elsewhere in the West. And so, for example, when I was 5 years old, Gamal Abdel Nasser, who was the president of Egypt, who was a very revered figure in the Middle East because he was trying to unify all the, Arab people under sort of one common umbrella. When he died, the people were, coming down the streets, lamenting in Beirut, screaming, "Death to Jews, death to Jews." And I was a five-year-old boy. I turned to my mom and said, "Well, why are you screaming death to Jews?" And she's like, "Shh, keep your head down, That was the first time that I sort of saw what, endemic Jew hatred looked like. Then to your story, when I was about 8 or 9 years old, so this is probably about a year before the start of Civil War, the teacher had asked us to each get up and tell the class what we want to be when we grow up. Oh, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a soccer player. I want to be a policeman. And one of the kids who knew that I was Jewish, with whom I had grown up for many years at that point, 4, 5, 6 years, got up and said, "When I grow up, I want to be a Jew killer," to raucous laughter and applause. And so that's the kind of reality we faced in Lebanon.
And you're living in Canada now. What are there similarities, worrying similarities?
There are huge similarities, and I'll actually demonstrate that similarity with what I call the circle of life of the Star of David. In The Parasitic Mind, I tell the story of how as we left Lebanon on that fateful day that we left Lebanon, and we cleared the Lebanese airspace, the airline pilot announced that we had just cleared Lebanese airspace. And so my mother puts a Star of David around my neck. I'm 11 years old at that point, and says, now you can wear this, wear it proudly, and no longer have to hide your identity. Fast forward to 2 weeks after October 7th in 2023, my son, who at that point was almost the exact same age as I was when that story happened, comes with my wife to pick me up. I was working on a laptop at a cafe. She had just picked him up from a soccer match in the east end of Montreal, where there's a particular demographic group that is prevalent. And as I got into the car, he said, Daddy, had you come to watch me play soccer today, and if you were wearing a Star of David, you'd be dead. That which I escaped in 1975 is now the reality that I face in 2025 now, but this was in 2023.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus, on edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
You know, ideas like this, whether it's anti-Semitism or even the sectarianism, you know, you describe them as parasitic. Well, not just the ideas as parasitic, but the mind as parasitic. How do you see that process working, where those ideas not only are destructive, but how they're spread?
Right. So let me explain to your viewers and listeners why I use this neuroparasitological framework. And so the idea is that the field of parasitology explores host-parasite interactions. And there are many, many instantiations of that in the animal kingdom, including in the human context. A tapeworm parasitizes your intestinal tract.
Yeah.
But a neuroparasite is one that needs to end up in your brain, altering your circuitry to suit its interests. A classic example, but there are many that I discuss both in my lectures and in my book. A wood cricket abhors water. It wants nothing to do with water. But when it is parasitized by a hairworm, the hairworm needs the wood cricket to jump into water in order for the hairworm to complete its reproductive cycle. So it merely commits suicide in the service of this parasite that has zombified its brain. And so that was my eureka moment. I said, well, now I'm going to take that framework and argue that human beings can be parasitized by actual physical brainworms, but also by ideological brainworms. And therefore, what I do in the book is I demonstrate how these idea pathogens developed. They all developed, regrettably, on university campuses, because it takes professors to come up with some of the dumbest ideas. And then towards the end of the book, I offer, hopefully, an effective mind vaccine against the stupidity.
And what is suicidal empathy? That's another one of your...
Right. Thanks for asking. So in the parasitic mind, what I'm arguing is that in order for me to hijack your capacity to think, I need to get to your cognitive system. But we are both a thinking and feeling animal.
Yeah.
Yes. So the parasitic mind talks about how to parasitize your cognitive system. Suicidal empathy then completes the story by looking at what happens when I parasitize your emotional system. Now, why specifically empathy? So empathy is a perfectly beneficial virtue to have. Mm. We are a social species. It makes sense for us to be, given that we are a social cooperative species, to exhibit empathy to others. When you and I are having a conversation, we have what's called theory of mind. I need to put myself in the mind of Fraser to be able to understand what's in your mind in order for us to have a meaningful conversation. Theory of mind is part of what's called cognitive empathy. So it's not a rejection of empathy. It's a rejection of the misfiring of empathy. So if I am more empathetic towards MS-13 gang members from El Salvador than I am to American vets, that's suicidal empathy. If I argue that all immigrants, irrespective of which culture they come from, are equally likely to assimilate into the host society, that's suicidal empathy. If I think it's not really nice to punish felons who've already been arrested 137 times, maybe we need 138 this time around, they'll come around, that's suicidal empathy. So basically what I argue in the book is that many of our failings in our domestic and foreign policies are due to this misfiring of empathy.
And how do we fight back against this? Because you would think an obvious answer would be to just think. But as you said, many of the most thinking, supposedly, people are actually the most susceptible to these bad ideas.
Yeah, that's a great question. Look, I don't want to say it's an intractable problem, because then there'd be no point in me getting out of bed. There'd be no point in me writing those books. There'd be no point in me being a professor, accepting your invitation. So I do think that with enough repetition, you can get people to move away from their cherished, anchored, you know, sacred cows. But it's very, very difficult to do so. As someone who spent a career trying to, you know, understand how people think, how to change their, you know, false behavior and false thoughts and so on, it's not easy to do. As a matter of fact, the greatest challenge is the following. So I appeared on a show actually hosted by a British psychiatrist about a year and a half ago, maybe. And at the end of the show, it was the first time that anybody had ever asked me this on a show. He said, Professor Saad, you've been a behavioral scientist for, you know, 30 plus years. What is the single phenomenon that has most surprised you about the human condition? Those are not the exact words he used, but that's the gist of it. So I thought for a second, I said, well, it's probably the inability for people to change their minds, irrespective of how much evidence you show them. As a matter of fact, oftentimes they even become more emboldened in their position the more you show them evidence to the contrary. So depending on the day, you might catch me being a bit more optimistic or a bit less optimistic, but I do believe it's a winnable battle, but you've got to be at it every second of every day.
And I'll maybe suggest something a bit more optimistic. People talk these days about a vibe shift, a change in the broader culture. How does that, how do those things influence the thoughts that people are having, the actions that people are taking?
Right. So if you now have a zeitgeist that doesn't create as much fear from self-censorship, obviously the student will put up their hands and say, but professor, what do you mean men can menstruate?
Yeah.
Right. So that kind of affords people the permission to actually challenge their lying eyes and so on.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I think that, so for example, many people have asked me, now that Trump has won a second term, are we, you know, is the woke mind virus, are we free? And I say, absolutely not. Yeah. Now, it's great. It's better than had the alternative happen. But these parasitic ideas, depending on which parasitic idea we're talking about, have taken between 50 to 80 years to flourish and then be promulgated across society. So it's not within a 4-year Trump presidency that that's it.
Yeah.
The virus has ceased to exist and we're all inoculated. So it will be a culture war, but I'd like to think that it won't take another 50 to 80 years to hopefully win the battle.
Gad Saad, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Cheers.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus, on edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.